You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation. You're listening to Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Thank you for subscribing on Apple and Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Himalaya. My name is David Ramil. Today is actually a bonus episode. As a network and with little basketball to talk about, there's been some discussion about scaling back on weekly content, but I'm going to continue to do the show as regularly as possible. And first, I kind of just want to get into some big news because the entire Locked On NBA network is going to be trying to share a theme for weekly content. And this week, we'll be talking about the best season in franchise history for each team. And so I'll be covering some of the best seasons in Miami Heat history. That should be really fun. And every show this week will be about going on to a deep dive. So make sure you listen to that throughout the week. But this being that bonus episode outside of that week's theme is just to go over some news from around the league and around about the Miami Heat specifically. So our first story was first reported by ESPN's Adrian Wojnarowski that the NBA, the NBA Players Association, and the ESPN are all in discussions for a televised competition of horse. The game would involve several high-profile players. If you're not familiar with the game of horse, how could you not be? It's a game everybody's probably played at one point or another, regardless of your level of skill. If you're probably listening to this podcast, there's a good chance that you've played it at one point or another. So no need to go into the details about how the game is played. There's also the internet if you're not quite familiar with it. But either way, the logistics of the competition have yet to be worked out. It would likely involve home gyms for those few players who have them. I imagine if they're talking about high-profile players, we are looking specifically at players who have the kind of money and resources where they already have a home gym available to them, or at the very least, a isolated and sanitized court that they might have access to. I'm not sure how many players have that kind of access right now. I can't imagine it's very many. Probably just the few most highest paid players in the league. I mean, I'm looking at a LeBron James. Maybe if Kevin Durant was healthy, etc. So I have questions about this competition. Is there going to be a production crew? Who is filming this? Who is recording this? Who has access? Who has a camera? Who is going to be filming this? And I'm not quite sure it's going to work. I think one of the things that we recognize from the first couple of days of the NBA 2K20 tournament that has been taking place with Miami's own Derrick Jones Jr. is that it's not particularly exciting. You're watching a couple guys on screen playing video games, not really interacting much with one another, and you're not really seeing a whole heck of a lot going on as far as the game itself. It's not quite as exciting maybe as something else. I'm sure maybe Myers Leonard might disagree with me as far as watching video games and things of that sort, but I from what I've heard, because I haven't watched the 2K20 tournament, it hasn't been very exciting. You're watching players that are okay or good maybe. Either way, they're playing a video game and it's not as exciting if you're not necessarily playing it yourself. So I have questions about whether or not these kinds of televised things will be exciting. The part about horse is watching you or your friends make these shots and then knowing whether or not somebody's going to be able to duplicate those shots. I'm not sure about the logistics of it, and I feel like it could get very boring very quickly. I mean, you're watching a shoddy camera setup from in LeBron James' home court, watching him dunk or take some kind of weird dribble or shot or things of that sort, and then across the country, Chris Paul has to do the same thing, or Dame Lillard has to do the same thing. Does that work? I mean, are we looking at bigger players, you know, taking advantage of the fact that they can dunk, and maybe smaller players like a CP3 might not be able to dunk as easily? I mean, could that be entertaining for a limited amount of time? I mean, I know we're all kind of starving for sports content at this point, but I don't know that this necessarily fits into that umbrella. Like, it kind of would be fun for a little while, but I feel like it could get really ugly really quickly. And so I have kind of issues with that. As far as the players involved, again, no details have been leaked out. It would have to be exciting players like that, like people that fans want to see. I could imagine a Russell Westbrook being there. I could see a Westbrook versus Durant matchup in horse. That would be kind of fun if Durant is healthy. Maybe a James Harden. He would likely include a lot of dribbling motions and things of that sort and some far-range shooting. I mean, I'm trying to pick my brain here real quickly as far as players around the league that might be interesting. But it also made me question who on the Heat would be the ideal choice to be a representative of this, you know, horse competition. The obvious answer would probably be Jimmy Butler as the team star. But given his offensive style of play, I'm not sure that he is the most exciting. Yeah, he can hit three-point shots. Yeah, he can do pretty much anything on the court. But is he going to be the kind of guy who can unseat a LeBron James or a James Harden in a competition? I don't know. I'm not sure that he is. So you look at our next biggest star, that's Bam Adebayo. Yeah, Bam has the ability to shoot from long distance, although he does not do so in game situations. I think he's obviously a very good dunker, and he could pull off some good moves there. He's a very strong candidate, so I would say that he's probably the player I think is second most likely to represent the Miami Heat. Going down the line, Derek Jones Jr. obviously has the dunk edge, but maybe not the shooting edge or the dribbling edge. Myers Leonard doesn't have it. Goran Dragic is a little too old for this kind of thing. I'm not sure I see him in a horse competition. I can't imagine Jay Crowder or Andre Iguodala doing it either. Duncan Robinson doesn't have that kind of cachet just yet. And although he has the shooting ability, I'm not sure that there's anything else as far as his ability to knock off other players in a horse competition. But there's one guy who I think would be a good option, a guy who can dribble the ball very well, who can shoot the ball, who can get to the rim. Not sure about his dunking ability, however, but that's Tyler Hero. I think he's got the most in his bag, let's say, as far as trick shots, dribble moves, things of that sort, things that could throw off another player as far as making attempts much more difficult or challenging. I'd like to see him incorporate some of those behind-the-back dribble moves, some spin moves, something a little out of the ordinary, and I think he's the player most skilled in that regard on this Heat roster. It seems a little unusual to think so, but I can't see anybody else who can really knock him off. If you have a disagreement with that, let me know. But for now, I think Tyler Hero is probably 1A as far as the player most likely to represent the Heat in such a competition, assuming he's healthy, of course, with Bam Adebayo being 1B, maybe 2A on his own regard. Because, again, he has a dunking package, probably has the shooting. His dribble's not necessarily that flashy, but maybe he doesn't necessarily have to be. Can he duplicate a James Harden step back? Can he duplicate a thunderous dunk from LeBron James? No and yes. And so there's a challenge there. And I wonder if Tyler Hero could do those same things. I think he could obviously do the dribbling portion of it, but I don't know about the dunking necessarily. So it would be interesting. If you could combine the two players, obviously that would be the best option. I'm just not sure that it's going to work out either way. But we'll stay tuned. At this point, everybody's kind of desperate for sporting-related news anyway. And so hopefully this will be something that we can play out and see how it works in the near future. Coming up next, I'll tell you why the Miami Heat model is suddenly very appealing in the Windy City. You're listening to Locked On Heat. I'm here to tell you about one of the most useful apps that you could possibly have on your phone. It's hard to find a time to sit down and read and to learn more. And when you don't have free time, you can't read or work on personal development. But there's this incredible app that solves this problem, and I highly recommend it, and it's called Blinkist. I've told you about it before. But it's basically very, very simple. It takes out a number of thousands and thousands of nonfiction books on your phone, your tablet, your web browser, and it takes the key takeaways, the need-to-know information from these thousands of nonfiction books, and it condenses them down into just 15 minutes that you can read or listen to. Successful people, business leaders, leaders across different fields are well known for reading a lot of books, and Blinkist is made for busy people like you who want to get the main points of a book quickly so you can start using that information right away. And with its audio feature, Blinkist makes it easy to finish a book during your commute, your lunch break, or while you exercise. Right now, a lot of us have a lot more free time on our hands than we're probably used to, but you're still trying to keep busy. You're still trying to learn as much as you possibly can. You're trying to find ways to be productive. So this is the app for you. 12 million people are already using it. It has a massive and growing library of self-help, business, history, sports, different kinds of things throughout. Again, it has a vast library of different books there, psychology, classic nonfiction titles that you always meant to read but never had the time to. Now you do. I've recommended Blinkist to a number of family friends. They all love how accessible it is, how easy it is to use. Again, with so much time on their hands, they're trying to find ways to get information as much as possible in a short, easy way to do so. And Blinkist has worked out so well for them. There are so many different popular books across so many different fields. It's so good to use and so easy. And so that's why with Blinkist, you get unlimited access to read or listen to a massive library of condensed nonfiction books, all the books you want, and all for one low price. Right now, for a limited time, Blinkist has a special offer just for our audience. You go to Blinkist.com/NBA and you try it free for 7 days, and you save 25% off your new subscription. That's Blinkist, BLINKIST.com/NBA to start your free 7-day trial. You also save 25% off, but only when you sign up at Blinkist.com/NBA. Player salaries might make a cut if Giannis Antetokounmpo could learn something from a former Heat legend. What that is might surprise you. First, however, comes a report from the Chicago Sun-Times and Joe Cowley, who has stated that the Chicago Bulls are looking at a potential front office shakeup. They've mentioned a potential number of moves there that will probably relinquish some of the current control from Gar Foreman and John Paxson, the duo known as Gar Pax, by a number of people who are just simply frustrated. I think it's all boiled to a head after this the All-Star break earlier this year in Chicago, which was a month and a half ago and feels like almost a lifetime ago. But either way, with Chicago hosting the All-Star break for the first time in a number of years, it kind of shed a light on the fact that the Bulls have fallen so far from being the kind of franchise that they once were, where they were the pinnacle of the league and obviously winning a number of championships because of Scottie Pippen, Michael Jordan, etc. And now, well, they've struggled to even make the playoffs, to even be a very decent team for a number of years. And so it's obvious that they're a laughingstock. They just haven't been able to do things well. They haven't drafted the right players. They haven't made the right moves in free agency. They haven't been able to pull off trades that really helped this team in any kind of long, surefire way. And so they're looking at shaking up the front office. And so they've mentioned a couple of candidates to boost their new front office. They've looked at Nuggets GM Arturas Karnisovas and Toronto GM Bobby Webster. These are two candidates that will also be interviewed. But Cowley from the Sun-Times says that Jerry Reinsdorf, the owner and governor of the Chicago Bulls, has a focus on the Miami Heat. Not only because of their front office personnel, he's also targeted Vice President of Basketball Operations Adam Simon, who is second to Pat Riley in that regard. But he also wants to mimic the structure of the Miami Heat model. And as well, he's also scouted several of their players that will be entering free agency. So Cowley continues that the Bulls have been putting both guard Goran Dragic and small forward Derrick Jones Jr. under the microscope the last month, and are hoping that the new hire or hires, whoever they will be aggressive on the trade front to move a tight cap corner that they have painted themselves into. So a lot to break down there. Obviously, they saw how Miami was able to turn around zero cap space this past summer into Jimmy Butler, how they've been able to turn players like Dion Waiters, etc., into Jay Crowder, into Andre Iguodala, and different things like that. How they have found diamonds in the rough like Duncan Robinson and Kendrick Nunn. How they've been able to take mid-level, first-round draft picks and hit on them like Hero, like Adebayo. And so there's a lot to like about the quote-unquote Heat model there. As far as the suspected front office shakeup, it would include John Paxson remaining as kind of an advisor to Reinsdorf, and Gar Foreman presumably no longer with the franchise. But I've got to be honest with you, I'm skeptical for a number of reasons. I just don't know that it's going to work as easily as they expected. Now, the model does work. I don't think it's going to work elsewhere. I feel like, maybe I've mentioned this before somewhat negatively, but when you look at players like Wayne Ellington, or maybe even today's Duncan Robinson, and you say that they've both been so good in Miami, and then you think that they'll be able to be this good elsewhere, that hasn't been the case. We've seen Ellington struggle since he left the team in free agency. Even before that, when he was with the Detroit Pistons, it's not so easy to find a way to unlock a player's abilities. I feel like that's the same modus operandi that would work in front office moves as well. First of all, you have to have an owner that's willing to spend the money, and Jerry Reinsdorf has historically been the exact opposite of that. He's not going to drop a lot of money on free agency. He's not going to wine and dine guys. He's not going to show them the money that it takes to lure a player. Now, Chicago is a fantastic city. You heard about players during All-Star break loving the area, loving the kind of energy of the nightlife there. And I think you could draw free agents there. It's not, and I hate to pick other franchises, but there are some franchises that just historically have not drawn a lot of players. Toronto being one of them. As good a franchise as they've been, as good as they have been about luring play, about making the most of players, winning a championship last year, etc. They don't historically lure free agency there. I'm not sure why. Players don't want to play in Canada. Maybe there's increased taxes there. Maybe it's too far from home. Many, many reasons, perhaps. But most importantly is the bottom line that they don't want to come and play in Toronto for the most part. So with Chicago, I don't think there'll be that obstacle. But the biggest obstacle has been Reinsdorf not willing to spend. Now, I'm not sure about Cowley being a legitimate source on this. Now, he claims that this is the plan in Chicago. Nobody's disputed it. Maybe he's sourced, maybe he's connected enough. Regardless, he's made the report. It makes a lot of sense that they're looking to shake this up. And Simon is well respected around the league, so it makes sense that he is among the short list of candidates that could come in there and immediately shake up this franchise, or at least impact the way they do things in a smarter way. But the Miami model doesn't happen overnight. I mean, it happened quickly with Pat Riley in that he was able to take away, he had a model for the kind of team he wanted. And so he traded away Glenn Rice, Matt Geiger, and Khalid Reeves for Alonzo Mourning. That was the player he wanted to build around. Step one, getting a building block. So is Simon the kind of player who can go there and trade, let's say, Lauri Markkanen or Wendell Carter Jr. or somebody else in that roster, Zach LaVine, to get a foundational player? Because I'm not sure that any of those guys that I just listed are that player. I'm not sure that any of them are a disgruntled star like Zoe, who was going to get paid a lot of money and wasn't going to collect that money in Charlotte. And so he wanted to test free agency. He wanted to have another opportunity, and Riley gave it to him. And so I think that's a big part of that model. Remember, something I've said many, many times before, Alonzo Mourning and Dwayne Wade have been with this team for, 23 years of the 25 years since Pat Riley took over in 1995. That is what's been the culture here. As much as we say the front office has done things right, and they most certainly have, you also have to have the right player in order to make that culture a reality, how to make it a constant presence. Now, as far as Cali's report that they're targeting Goran Dragic or Derrick Jones Jr., well, I love both of those players, but I don't think either of them are going to impact that Bulls locker room. Derrick Jones is young. He's really quiet. He's not the kind of guy who's going to be a vocal leader in that locker room. And so while you like his ability as a long defender, a guy who can guard in the perimeter, who can potentially start to, you know, make some shots from the perimeter, who can obviously get to the rim and finish at a high level, is he the kind of player you really want to target? I mean, is this what you're looking at as far as a Miami Heat model? Derrick Jones Jr.? This is not a knock on Derek. It's just I think even he would say that he's a little shocked at being targeted as the face of a franchise or a representative of that Heat culture. He is a part of it in the sense that he knows how to work and he's done work, etc. But it didn't work in Phoenix, and who knows what will happen after he gets paid by Chicago or anyone. Now, as far as Goran, I don't doubt his work ethic, and I don't doubt his ability to still be an impactful player, because I think he can be. I think he's obviously a much more impactful player than Derek is at this point in their career. But also, as much as Goran might be a representative of Heat culture, he's not going to have that kind of voice in that locker room. Like, he's respected now. He's been with this team for a long time. He was there with Dwayne Wade before. He was there with Chris Bosh before. He was there with Hassan Whiteside, Chris Henderson, Norris Cole, Mario Chalmers. These guys played alongside Goran. We all seem to forget that. He wasn't the leader on this team at that point in time. He was a quiet voice, and he has a hard time. Something he's admitted to me and talked to me about is that, you know, it was not easy for him to become the voice of that locker room right away, because he was a European-born player, and sometimes they don't get that same kind of respect in the locker room. He earned it, and it took time for him to establish himself as a presence in that locker room. We heard Myers Leonard tell me about this last week, how much Goran is a respected voice in that locker room, but that wasn't immediate. I'm not sure that he's going to go into this locker room in Chicago if they really do target him in free agency and throw him a shit ton of money, and all of a sudden Zach LaVine and Wendell Carter and, you know, Markkanen and other guys are going to be like, huh, 34-year-old Goran Dragic is suddenly telling me to work my ass off, I'm going to start listening to him. Who the hell cares? Like, he's not that kind of player. He's just not. I mean, I think you have to be realistic about this. As much as I personally like Goran Dragic as a player and as a role model in that locker room, I don't think he has that kind of voice to go to Chicago. He does not have that kind of respect around league circles where people are going to be like, huh, he's telling me to go and work my ass off. I'm going to have to go and do it. So this idea of duplicating the Miami model is ridiculous. And if they're really looking at Goran Dragic and Derrick Jones Jr. as being the two players that are going to help initiate or control that locker room to some degree, it makes it sound even shakier. So we'll have to see how it plays out. Obviously, free agency is a long ways from here. We're not sure what's going to happen. We're not sure if there is going to be a season next year at all, to be honest with you. So for now, there's no need to kind of panic or no need to really think about that too far in advance. I'm not sure that Derrick Jones is actually on the radar. I'm not sure Goran Dragic is even going to opt out. There's a good chance that he'll sign. He doesn't have a player option. He's going to be a free agent regardless. It's just whether or not he does accept a one-year balloon deal, as Miami Herald's Barry Jackson has reported, and as how I talked about with Andre Fernandez of The Athletic recently. So there are options to retain Goran Dragic. I think personally those are more likely from everything that he's told me and told reporters. He wants to stay in Miami. He does not want to disrupt the lives of his kids or his wife. They're very happy here in South Florida, and my feeling is that they would want to stay here. So we'll see how that plays out. But moving on, could Chris Bosh be the key to unlocking Giannis Antetokounmpo? You're listening to Locked On Heat. Subscribe to new and archived episodes of Locked On Heat on the Himalaya, as well as on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. If you're in iTunes, please leave a rating and review, especially if it's a good one. So this is a story from The Ringer, who mentioned some. They've got a series that they're working on right now, written by Kevin O'Connor, who's one of the big names over at The Ringer. He's writing about an independent study who certain players around the league should be watching and learning from. And one of his targets was Giannis Antetokounmpo. The premise of the piece is basically, during this hiatus, if you're a player that's looking to work on your game and to kind of take your game to another level, there should be players that you might consider watching. And one of the players that Giannis Antetokounmpo should be watching, at least according to Kevin O'Connor, is Miami's own Chris Bosh. But I found it interesting that it wasn't for the reason you'd suspect. You think about Chris Bosh, and you think about his impact in Miami specifically. And I think you could make a very, very strong argument that the reason why Chris was as effective as he was in Miami was because he was able to space the floor at a time when nobody around the league was doing it. He was a stretch five before anybody else had a stretch five. He was able to unlock a certain model around the league that was able to be duplicated not just in San Antonio, but in Golden State and elsewhere. And that was my first thought in reading this. It's like, oh, sure. Just as easy as writing it, you can just say he should be patterning his game after Bosh and expanding his shooting range so that he can shoot 38% from three-point range. Surprisingly, again, that's not what O'Connor was saying. He actually thought that what Giannis can learn from Chris Bosh was to have a better face-up game. That one of the things that Chris Bosh did so effectively in Toronto and Miami was able to just get to the rim using a series of really good offensive moves, starting with a face-up game where he would be able to face the basket, break down a defender, put up a hook shot or a layup over an opponent. And he was able to score at 1.1 points per each post-up possession. So, I mean, that's on average. That's the statistical breakdown. And that was pretty impressive. That was when he was doing this in Toronto, obviously. And I think that still stayed in Miami to some extent. Like, he was able to be a very good player and getting to the rim, but with guys like Dwayne and LeBron getting to the rim as easily, you don't want to clog the paint, which is why most of Chris's offense, to me, it feels like it was from mid-range. Like, he was kind of the outlet there. I think there were times where he certainly faced up an opponent and drove to the basket. He certainly finished at the rim at a pretty high level, but it wasn't as necessary because you had guys like Dwayne and LeBron who could get to the rim so easily. And so Chris was there from 15 to 18 feet out waiting for an outlet pass. If one of those players were denied, if Chalmers was denied, if anybody else was denied a shot at the rim, they could find Chris at the elbow there, and he would be able to knock that shot down. And he did so very effectively. But I guess O'Connor is talking about Toronto Chris Bosch, and he was saying that, you know, obviously he does score very, very well, and he includes a number of highlights from Chris's days in Toronto where he takes down a number of opponents. He's very good at facing up the basket, going against Tim Duncan and others, and just he has some really, really good moves. He was an incredible scorer. We all forget, you know, and kind of looking at how Chris has been marginalized a little bit because of the three-point, I'm sorry, not the three-point, because of the big three era. But the reality is he was a very, very good player in Toronto, and it was a hell of an impactful player in Miami that we've kind of, a lot of people around the league have overlooked. But because of his defense, he was able to do so much for this team. But on his offensively, he was a fantastic player for a number of years in Toronto. He put up almost 24 points per game. He was a high-level scorer and one of the best players in the league, and a numerous time all-star, et cetera. So you kind of tend to overlook that as his game was, again, more out to the perimeter. But he was very good. He wasn't, the thing with Chris was that he was a little too big to be a standard four at the time, a little smaller than your typical center. So he was kind of somewhere in between. But he was also a guy who had the unfortunate soft label attached to him from, you know, Shaquille O'Neal and others. That was still when the big man was still very big in, at a point in the league. When Chris entered the league in 2003, I think it was the end of the center era, but you still had guys like Shaq and others that were more representative of what the center position was like at that point in time. Chris didn't necessarily fit that model. He was a little bit more polished, a little bit smaller, a little bit more smooth in his game. And so I think he, you know, he was kind of, a lot of people didn't know how to view him and his own, again, his own incredible offensive repertoire. So he wasn't your typical center. He wasn't backing guys down. He was more about facing up the basket and being able to use some high-level footwork in order to get his shots off. Now, whether or not this applies to Giannis or not, you know, I think O'Connor makes a good point in that Giannis is a lot like a more perimeter-based Shaquille O'Neal, but in the sense that he's using a lot of his athleticism and size and strength just to get past an opponent. Like, if you look at some of Giannis's best moves, they don't involve a whole heck of a lot of polish. It's more mostly about just like saying, well, I take three steps, and those three steps covers about 20 feet of space, and then getting to the rim over an opponent. You know, no one's going to get in the way of a Giannis Antetokounmpo fast break. Not many players, anyway. Bam might be one of the few of them who could. But as far as what Giannis can do, there needs to be a little bit more polish to his game, and that's why he could learn from a guy like Chris Bosch. So I would see that that would be a really good connection there, considering the fact that Bam Adebayo, who shares an agent with Antetokounmpo, has already worked out with Chris Bosch. So for, you know, assuming that at some point in the future, that's why I think this has, you know, this could have some ties to it, and that Bam could make a call and say, Chris, could you train my good friend Giannis Antetokounmpo, who I spent many days with in Chicago during the most recent All-Star game, at events around town, in the same locker room, etc. Could you please help my good friend Giannis Antetokounmpo and kind of teach him some moves there? And then while Bam and Chris Bosch are both working out with Giannis, well, I think it's just a natural step then for Giannis to kind of be lured to the Miami Heat way of doing things. I think that's the next step, the next evolution there. We can only wait and see. Who knows what'll happen, but it's a good connection. It's one that I'm sure a lot of Heat fans are starting to salivate over if eventually Giannis Antetokounmpo can be lured away from the Milwaukee Bucks and does consider the Miami Heat. But one story I didn't want to kind of get into a little bit is the possibility of player salaries being cut. I think with everything that's going around the world, not just the league, many fans might not necessarily care about players getting their salaries cut, but I think it's more, one, you probably shouldn't have that attitude about any player or person, regardless of how much money they are or aren't making. They're losing the money that they were owed to them because they were under contract. So you can't pick and choose your spots. You can't say, well, I feel bad for public workers or doctors and nurses that are having their salaries cut or things of that sort, and then not feel bad for NBA players who earned those contracts. But anyway, the point is that we're looking at league sources saying that the kind of loss of revenue that the league is experiencing and expected to continue to feel make this for a very, very bad financial situation moving forward, and that players are going to start losing parts of their salary moving forward. I think there's a part in the CBA that kind of writes in that players could lose up to a certain amount of percentage based on each game that's canceled, and it looks more and more likely that games will be canceled. There's no official word from the league, who Adrian Wojnarowski is reporting this amongst others, but the league hasn't said that we're canceling games because they're still optimistic that they can put something together. I'm not as optimistic. I think they're just kind of waiting to see whether or not something miraculous happens, but that's often an unsuccessful way of going about things. Either way, we can expect that players will start losing some money here. Teams are already losing amount of money. We're not quite sure what the ramifications are, because we're not sure how games are going to be played again at any point in the future. So this is something to continue monitoring. I think you're also looking at the fact that teams around the league are going to be losing so much money that the salary cap is going to be so severely impacted. You can't say, if you're looking at Team X or even Miami, and you're looking at Miami's chances of adding a superstar like Giannis in a couple of years, it seems so far-fetched right now considering the state of the world and the league. They're going to have less money than they thought they had available to them. You're going to have to watch how you dole out that money very carefully. And maybe it might make more sense for a team like Milwaukee to kind of just throw as much money as they possibly can at Giannis, knowing that they can't overpay him, that they can pay him more than any other team can. So that changes things. Who knows? I guess for a player like Giannis, I would say that it's less about making money and probably more about establishing his legacy early on and winning a championship. And I don't know whether or not he could do that more easily in Miami or Milwaukee. I think Miami probably might be a better team in a couple years. If you remove Adetokounmpo from Milwaukee and you look at who's left in that Bucks roster versus who's currently on Miami's roster and who would be there in a couple years, if you add Giannis to that roster, I think they're better than Milwaukee's roster. But that's an argument for another time. That's it for today. You can connect with me on Twitter. Use the hashtag AskHelloHeat or email me at LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. I'm David O'Mill signing off, and thank you as always for your support. Yeah!
Wrap it up, B.